Welcome to Hallel Fellowship on the internet at hallel.info. Genesis 27, verses 1 through 29, Isaiah 46, verses 3 through 11, and Hebrews 11, verses 17 through 22 explore how divine plans supersede human intentions, prejudices, and short-sightedness. Faith, trust, and generational legacy play out in the lives of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the Hebrew names of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But Yitzchak's physical blindness reveals his inability to see God's choice of unexpected vessels and the importance of seeking divine wisdom. The prophets reveal how curing spiritual as well as physical vision problems would be a key role for the Messiah and fundamental to heaven's redemptive plan.
Our special readings here for Shabbat HaGadol, or the Great Sabbath, we picked up Malachi chapter 3, verse 4 through chapter 4, verse 6, and Matthew 26, verses 17 through 30. Torah readings starting first off of what they all have to do with each other before we get to the ones that are specifically here for this particular Shabbat HaGadol. The passages that we're looking at with Genesis 27 and Isaiah 46 and Hebrews chapter 11 are really all connected with these themes of God's sovereignty. We've been talking a lot about that as we've been progressing here through Genesis, about God's sovereignty. Man can make lots of plans. And as we saw there in James chapter 4, our approach to making plans about this and that, what does the Apostle Yaakov tell us and recommend to us? We should say, rather, if the Lord wills it, we will do this or do that, or we will go here or go there. Why? That's because God is sovereign over the things of the earth, and we can make all kinds of plans about what we're going to do. But if there is a plan that the Lord is carrying out, we have to really be careful that we are really in tune with the Lord so that we're not fighting against the Lord. As we saw that the great sage Gamaliel is recorded there in the book of Acts as saying, hey, the apostles may be doing something and we don't really understand what's going on, but we should be careful because who may we be fighting against? We may be fighting against God himself, yes. So we have to really be careful that maybe God is doing something that we don't understand here. So before we start saying, set in stone, this and this and this must be this particular way, if it's something that God hasn't specifically revealed, and that's something that we saw in our passage from Isaiah chapter 46, if that's something that God hasn't specifically revealed, we should really hold on loosely to our ideas of what God must be doing something here or there. So that's one of the things that we have to really be careful of, trying to put plans in God's mouth. And the other thing we saw about faith or trust, that's something that Abraham is called the father of faith, the father of trust in God. And that is something that's a really important thing for us to also see, is that not only is this faith, this trust in God, fundamental to our relationship with the divine, but also it's something that develops over time. So just like Abraham was not the rock of faith from the very beginning, he became and he was transformed into that rock of faith throughout his life. Step by step by step by step, stepping forward into it. And also, in conjunction with the God's sovereignty, to also take a look at what God's purpose is, what the purpose of heaven is in this. Because that's one of the things that the Apostle Yaakov also said in his short little letter there of James in chapter 1, where he's saying, hey, stuff may happen to us. We may face trials of many kinds. But it goes on to say that we should ask for wisdom why these things are happening, so that we're not like a ship tossed back and forth. Things happen to us, we don't know why. But one of the things we can pray for and seek is wisdom in what these things are really teaching us. Because just in the passage we saw in Hebrews chapter 11, these great figures of faith and the trust in God, they had to see le'olam va'ed, or to the horizon and over the other side. Because the only one who does know the end from the beginning, like we saw there in Isaiah chapter 46, is the creator of heaven and earth. And that is where we need to be seeking wisdom from. Why are these things happening? What are they supposed to teach us? So they just don't become a bunch of head knowledge in our heads, because that was something else that we saw in our passages here today, is this head knowledge about how to worship God and how to specifically go through and do this can actually distance us from God if it's not connected with what? Trust, that relationship with God. If our knowledge about God is separated from trust and faith in God, we can actually find ourselves distanced from the creator of heaven and earth. And something else we saw in all these passages is the blessings and the promises are passed from one generation to the next. And in the case of what we saw today in Genesis 27, maybe even over the designs of the people who are passing the blessing. The blessings and the promises will be passed, whether the people involved may want to or not, or think that they're passing it on to the people who, quote, should, unquote, get it or not. So, and in all of this, we're seeing that heaven's plans are really being unfolded, even through very, you could say, imperfect vessels. Deception, even. Because that's one of the things that Yaakov, when you extrapolate the name of Yaakov outward, it just strictly means something that sticks out, which is why it is a descriptor of a heel, because a heel sticks out from your foot. So that's where that Hebrew word for Yaakov is derived from, can mean something that just juts out. And that is also, as a byword, can mean a deceiver or something that supplants, pushes something else out of the way. So, moving on here further into God's sovereignty over human actions. Now, we saw in our Genesis passage there that, talking about deception, that Jacob, he's securing this blessing that was meant for Esau. The blessing his father intended. So Yitzhak is saying, I want the blessing to go to what? The firstborn. The firstborn, culturally, was the one who was to get the blessing of the family, where the whole family weight is and their kavod, their glory, is going to pass through, would be the firstborn. But heaven had other designs for it. Because what did we learn at the end of the passage before? And we're talking about legacy passage. What was Esau's choice for his family? And the wives that he was choosing, they brought distress to the family. Because that was going into a different direction from where the family was going. And we see this, and we're going to see it a few more times throughout the history of the people of God, is that this legacy, it's difficult to have two people moving together if you're really not on the same page together. So that's one of the things that gets to be a very challenging thing. And it's one of the things for newlyweds. It's always a challenging thing. I mean, remember when just after we got married, it's like always a great thing to have a kind of a stable situation in your first year of marriage, right? So right after we get married, what do? We hauled up and moved overseas to Korea. And so we spent our first anniversary. Yes, a few steps before that. Yes. Yes. So we moved to California and then overseas. So we're moving around a whole lot, but still, and especially if you are, you know, had any sort of a chance to go visit another country with a completely different culture and a completely different language, there's a lot of what you call culture shock that comes into the midst of that. And the tensions that come from just doing everyday things like going to the store and getting your groceries can be a huge challenge of getting the stuff you actually want versus... I always would joke that we'd always go shopping with my caveman Korean. You know, just kind of point at stuff and grunt and say, hey, I need that. And the place where we were living was not as easy to communicate as it was like in a big city like Seoul. And Seoul, we found that there was actually, I actually got stopped in the subway with someone who had their English homework that wanted help with it. So I actually started a conversation with somebody in the subway where a guy was just needing some help with his English. But where we were in the quote sticks, which was, you know, it's a city that's actually larger than Santa Rosa, but by Korean standards, that was a small city. Out in the sticks, and there was not a lot of foreigners. In fact, there weren't many foreigners that were there, and their grasp of English in a lot of places was not fantastically great. So thus you would have some huge challenges that would come in. But needless to say, in all that, it when you're just starting a life together, and then throw a huge complication into that as well, can be a huge difficulty that can come in. So you just have to watch for it, for some of the usual challenges that come with two people starting a life together. You get the other challenges that come in that can cause a big problem. And with, you could say with Esav, there was a lot of, you could say, culture shock for his parents in what the relationship was with the new family that he was started there. So thus Rivka, the mother, saying, no, don't want the legacy to go that way. So thus you have a break between the father and the mother about where this legacy was going to go. But despite all this, when getting back to our account here in Genesis 27, despite all of the subterfuge that was going on, the plan was for the legacy of Avraham to then pass through Yaakov, from Avraham to Yitzhak to Yaakov, and not through Esav. Because Esav, basically, he was blending in with the people of the land. He was blending in with the people of the land, and thus it was something that was not on track with where God was going. And in Isaiah 46, we see there that God is declaring, talked about declaring the end from the beginning, his purposes, where he's going with it, what his will is going to accomplish. So this really underscores that really no human action, whether it's even including deceit or people not getting things straight, some error of some sort, can really thwart where God is going with his plans. If we look at trust or faith in the midst of uncertainty, that Hebrews passage we looked at in Hebrews 11, verses 17 through 22, we had seen those particular patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, and Yosef, or Joseph there, that they were trusting God's promises, even when the outcomes seemed unclear. And as we keep going through Genesis, we're going to see Yosef, and it looked like his situation was going from bad to worse. He was having those encounters with God with the dreams, but the dreams were not leading to great encounters with his family. His family was chafing at the dreams that he was having and the interpretations that were coming with them. And in Genesis 27, we see that those, though not all of these actions with Yaakov would be commendable, because we saw how many times was there a question from Yitzhak to Yaakov, are you really Esav? And yeah, it's me. Yep. And then with even the tactile lie with the goat's hair to try to mask what the situation of with even his skin for that tactile confirmation of it. Was he senile or what was he thinking? Yeah. You know, they talked about, and that's something we're going to get to in just a moment, because that's an actual very interesting lesson that comes in to this. And a lot of people over the centuries have actually commented on this about how it was that this could have happened with this subterfuge and how it could possibly have worked. Why was Isaac picking Esau to begin with? Yes, and that goes back to that whole thing with the firstborn. And the firstborn being culturally what was selected. You see in a lot of writings of the time period, in both Canaanite culture and Mesopotamian culture, that the firstborn is to be the one normally where you would have your blessings go down. And you saw with Abraham, when he did not have his own firstborn, he was, as a cultural practice was, that we've seen evidence of, he selected his trusted servant, Eleazar, to fill that role of the firstborn, because that was the one, his right-hand man, so to speak, would be the one to carry on the legacy because he was highly trusted. So, and when we talk about God's eternal plan and his foreknowledge of where things are going with that, in Isaiah 46, that message of declaring the end from the beginning. And a lot of people have tried to then use that as a, you might say, a decoder ring for the earlier parts of Genesis. And they'll come up with elaborate graphs and charts and designs about the days of Genesis and say, well, he declares the end from the beginning. So thus, if you figure out all the little details and how what they metaphorically applied to this and that, you'll find out the dates for the coming of the kingdom of God. So it's one of those things that's, what is the actual message of declaring the end from the beginning here? Is it meant for you to become a soothsayer? Or is it to figure out where your current issues are related to where God's plan is? And that's one of the things that we had seen with the Hebrews 11 passage, and we talked about when the Apostle Yaakov in his letter to James, that, hey, when stuff is happening to you, seek wisdom. Seek wisdom from the one who's declaring the end from the beginning, where things are actually headed with Earth's history. And we saw, and we talk about this foreshadowing of the crisis that shows up here in Genesis 27, roll back a couple of chapters into Genesis 25, and that was one of the things, that's a vision that was given, that from their very births, that the older one, the older of the sons, there's these warring factions in the womb, and the older would serve the younger. And that's a recurring theme that's been observed for thousands of years in the Bible, that yes, culturally, in ancient Near East culture, that the firstborn would be the one to carry on the family legacy. But you see time and time and time again in the history that's revealed to us from heaven here, that that's not how heaven is actually operating. The best choice may be the second born. Or in the case of the great forerunner of the house of Yehuda, but David, he was like one of the last, the forgotten son. It was like, okay, the family wants to make the great presents for the selection of the new king. And David was not even brought to the consideration for that. Where the prophet was said, you know, hey, do you have anybody else? Yeah, okay, you've presented your family here, but wait a minute, is there somebody else here we need to consider? Oh yeah. And then to go get my younger son, yeah. So heaven's selection. And we see that being revealed there in the word is like, hey, even though Shaul or Saul was literally head and shoulders above the rest in his stature and his presence and whatnot, that's one of the great lessons we get from that account of the selection of Shaul and of David, that God looks at what? The heart. God looks at what's going on inside, not what's going on outside. Somebody may seem to be the best pick. They seem like they have it all together, but the Lord really knows things, what's happening inside the person, and also what the potential will be for it. You think of the Apostle Paul. At the time he was called, would you have chosen him? Thinking he would be the one. No, that would have said, and in fact, after he was chosen, a lot of the congregations of believers like, no, you got to be kidding. And they were afraid of him for good reason, because he was on a mission and even had a commission. He was on a commission mission to go and round up these heretics and to haul them in, until he found out, oh, he was actually the heretic of what the kingdom of God was actually doing on earth. He was the separatist from it. And like his teacher, Gamaliel, he had to learn, hey, God was doing something that maybe we didn't understand. And we should really be keeping in mind that God is doing something, and we should be looking to be on the same page as heaven. And this is a recurring phrase that you see throughout the Bible. It's expressed different ways, but several times it's Lador Vador, and that's even shows up in a number of Hebrew prayers as well. Lador Vador, from generation to generation. And that is a very important expression. Lador Vador, and also Le'olam Va'ed. So Lador Vador, from generation to generation, Le'olam Va'ed, to the horizon and beyond, or forever and ever. Those two concepts are very important, because they say we are part of something that started long before us and will carry on long after us. We are a part of that chain that heaven is going through history on. So that's one of those aspects when you're on, when you think of some sort of team activity where you're doing something like tug of war or something like that. Everybody's what? Grabbing onto the rope. And, you know, if you're really organized with it, you even get into synchronizing your pulling. And when you pull and how much you pull and what sequence you do of pulling, because why? It is a joint effort to exert the most amount of force on the rope compared to the other team on the other side. Or if you're just looking to haul things, or even get a car, if you've ever gotten a car stuck in the mud, or as I was growing up, got stuck in the snow, getting out of that is a team effort, and you have to coordinate what you're doing, because if everybody's just kind of pushing whenever they feel like it, how effective is that? Not very. So that's why when we are looking at our segment, our part of this legacy of what God is doing on earth, we're part of what's come before us, we're part of what's happening now, and we're part of what is going to happen in the future ahead of us. So that's why you see a name of the Almighty talked about as the one who was, the one who is, and the one who is to come. That the being a very important aspect of the name, because that is saying, hey, it's not just in one point in time. It is something that is happening out into the future. And it is very interesting that heaven has given us an example of that in the world around us. And it's something that's even only come to be understood in the past 100 or so years, and even in more recent years. And that is one of those bizarre aspects of the way God has designed things that sometimes we can even get kind of clueless about, with the idea of the very smallest little bits of how each of us are built and the strange characteristic of that, if we want to find out where an electron is, we can find out its position, but we won't know its velocity. We can find out its velocity, but we won't know its position. And it's a very strange thing, because one of the things that happens when we try to observe one of those things is we end up changing it. So we don't actually know what they are at any particular point in time. That's why in modern times, you know, we grew up with the model of the atom, right? Kind of looks like a planet with a bunch of orbiting moons around it and such. The old view of the atom. Well, now it's kind of gone to the view of the atom as like a cloud. So those electrons are just like, it's a cloud, the possibility of where the electron is around it. And that is a lot. It gives us a hint into what we're talking about here today about God's plans, is that we may think we can nail one aspect of it, but we don't really know the other aspects of it. And it can almost change out from underneath us when we try to nail things down. So one of the things that we go with is what has been revealed from it, because it's a different sort of thing. If you are handed, okay, here is the position of the electron and its velocity, and that's given to you. So thus the scientist knows, okay, that's where it is. Because if the scientist tried to go figure it out, he'll get one or the other, but not both. So thus the Bible is like the same thing. The things that are revealed through the prophets, through the patriarchs, and ultimately through the Messiah are those coordinates that show us exactly the things that are happening. Now, when we try to go out and try to fill in the details around those things, we have to really hold loosely onto those things, because we may get one aspect of it, but not another aspect of it. We may get something right, but something maybe also quite wrong and different about it. So we can have our debates about this and that and the other, but in the end, if that's not something that's specifically spelled out and what's been revealed to us, the end from the beginning, well, then we should really be seeing that that's something that we could be completely off base on. I mean, I come from a tradition that did a lot of date setting, and all those dates came and they went, and they came and they went, and they came and they went. And one of the things that really ended up with that was a lot of people lost their trust in God, because people were so sure that they had the right date the first time. And then that date came, and then it went. Then they came up with a new date. And they were so sure that they had it that time. Then the date came, and then it went. So thus, that's an example of how, when trying to be extremely sure about things that God has not revealed to us right straight out, we can get ourselves into an issue that, rather than building our faith, they can be doing what? Harming it, eroding it, eroding the witness that we have. So let's zeroing in here today on one very important aspect of the passage that we're looking at today in Genesis 27. And this is an old song, is, you know, do you see what I see? You might remember that one. And that particular aspect is really important with the Genesis 27 passage, verse 1. And it talks about that Yitzhak, his eyes were too dim to see. And it is amazing how much has been written over the centuries about that particular phrase. His eyes were too dim to see. Why was his eyes too dim to see? And the medieval commentator Rashi has come up with possibilities on it, one of which, they were dimmed by the smoke from his idolatrous wives of Esav. So his idolatrous wives, they were doing so much offering to idols that he couldn't see because there was so much smoke. Or when Yitzhak was bound at the altar and his father was about to slaughter him, the heavens opened and the ministering angels saw it and wept. Then their tears came down and fell on his eyes. or his eyes were deliberately dimmed so that Yaakov could take the blessing. And those are possibilities. Some others, commentators like the Rashbam, came up with a similar one because of his age. But very interestingly, it was made the observation that compare that to what we read of Eli or Eli there in 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 2, talking about his eyes began to fail. And that becomes interesting as we start moving on here further. Now, the commentator, you often see it, it looks like kimchi, but it's a kimchi. That's actually just a abbreviation of his name. But needless to say, that particular commentator, not Korean. It just happens to be a Hebrew acronym that is transliterated. And it's one of those things like when you're transliterating, there is the form of the chet, which is a guttural sound. How do you transliterate that? You'll often see it transliterated with a ch. Well, we in English will do what with that? Ch, like Chanukka. Yes. So with Chanukka instead of Hanukkah. So thus, how do you transliterate that into English? So one way you'll often see it is ch, but another way you'll see in more modern times is to take the Russian approach to it, which is a kh. Which will, so it gets you closer to the guttural sound of it. Yes, the clear your throat thing. Good. Yeah, so it's with those who speak German, you'll think that there's a lot of clearing your throat going on there. But needless to say that Kimchi said, when Yitzhak became blind, he still had 20 years more to live, but he still thought he was close to death. That is why he called Esau to bless him. His early blindness may have been a case of God's causing suffering to some of the righteous for wise reasons of his own. So that's into the camp of, well, things happen and we just don't know why. And, that's where you get a little bit of that where the apostle Yaakov says, hey, if things are happening, trials of many kinds, ask for wisdom to figure out why it's going on. So you're just not, oh, well, I guess bad things happen to good people and brush it off. Maybe it's a lesson. Maybe it's something that heaven is trying to teach us and to help us to mature and be complete in this. Another possibility is from the commentator Sferno, where the dim is a homonym for the word rebuke, and his sons committed sacrilege at will, which from 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 13. So his sons committed sacrilege at will, and he did not rebuke them. So the interesting thing happening a little bit under the hood when we get back to our passage in Genesis 27:1 is the word that you have translated there of Zakain, or he grew old, is paired then with the verb of kala, or kaha, actually, to be dimmed or to be darkened. And that is an explanation. It's okay, he was old and his eyes were growing dim. So we know today we got a whole bucket list of various physical conditions that can happen just with age, and you get you lose your close vision and you can only see things far away. You got macular degeneration, you got what we call the issues of diabetes, issues that will impact your vision, other things that can come in to impact your cataracts, can cloud your vision so you can't see, all kinds of things that can be just maladies of age and things that can come in. And, today we've got, with the cataract surgery, it could be a very quick procedure that can swap out your original lens with an artificial lens. But it is always interesting to see how God's design is so much better than even the man's design of it. Because what is one of the things that happens with the artificial lenses that you get with a cataract surgery? Your close-in vision. It is just amazing that the lenses that God gave us, if you don't have a myopia or a nearsightedness from earlier on in life, that lens that you have can focus from like right here all the way out into infinity, which is amazing. And when they do the artificial lenses for cataract surgeries, they can get your far off vision. But one of the things you often have is you need readers to after the cataract surgery. So that's one of those things that the even with modern technology, you're still not able to duplicate that stretchiness and clarity of vision that you get with just what God has created there. But needless to say, whether it's something of age or some sort of other condition, that the interesting observation that Sforno was making and something you had seen from Kimchi before him was that there could be a possible play on words going on here with the dimmed and darkened also being a Hebrew. When he's talking about a homonym, as you can see there on the screen, you've got Kaf, Hey, Hey is Kaha, and Kiha, which is a form of the verb, it's in the PL stem. It just means it's more intense. Kal is the basic form of the verb. PL is a more intensive form of the verb, and it just has a slightly different vowels and pronunciation with it. But it with the Hebrew consonants, they're all the same. It's kaf, hey, hey, kaf, hey, hey. It's the same. So with that, you often get a lot of plays on words in Hebrew where you have words with the similar spellings, but they have different meanings. They're homonyms of each other. They sound the same, but they can either be spelled differently or pronounced differently on this. So it's an interesting observation that you could have an interesting play on words is that his eyes were dimmed or he's not able to see clearly, and thus he did not rebuke. He did not rebuke his sons. Because we had talked about in some weeks ago of what were the high priest Eli's sons doing there when the tabernacle was at Shiloh. They were, fooling with the women. They were helping themselves to the offerings and just making it such a loathsome situation at God's house that they're what? Gluttonous, yes. Gluttonous, lecherous. It was so bad that women did not want to go to the tabernacle. People just stayed away. Because, they may have known all of the duties and whatever they were supposed to perform there at the tabernacle, but their behavior was so reprehensible. What was going on inside them was so dark that people said, we don't care what you know. We don't want to be there. So thus, they were then what you see happening later on in the prophets when they talk about when the Lord says, my name is blasphemed or it's brought low, made insignificant among the nations because of you, because of your behavior. So that's a very important observation that comes in here because you see something very similar that Yeshua says there in John chapter 9, verses 35 through 41. And this is a passage where he's talking about where the healing of a blind man. And that's what the chapter 9 is really all about. And where there you see that Yeshua is using specifically this example of someone who has physical blindness. And it was well-known physical blindness. He was blind from his youth. He's blind. Everybody knew he had always been blind. So God was taking this situation and saying, okay, we're going to change it. So then with Yeshua comes in, sees him, he's blind, and the guy wants to see. And so that's where we come into this particular passage. Yeshua heard that they had put him out, and finding him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? He answered, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? Yeshua said to him, you have both seen him, and he is the one who's talking with you. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. And Yeshua said, for judgment I came into the world, so that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind. Those of the Perushim who were with him heard these things and said to him, "We are not blind too, are we?" Yeshua said to them, "If you were blind, you would not have no sin. But since you say, 'We see,' your sin remains." So thus, when you see a prophecy in Isaiah of talking about one of the hallmarks of the Mashiach or the Messiah was going to be, he was going to come and open the eyes of the blind, free those who are in darkness, and also to bring those who are in prison out. So that is something that can be both physical, real, but also those who are in a spiritual jail, who are spiritually blind, who are spiritually have these ailments that are going on. Because that's one of the modern marvels that you see in medicine today is how much we call it what? The psychosomatic effect of how people are thinking, how their emotions are, can have a huge impact on what their recovery is. You know, you can have someone who gets great treatment, but if their spirit is fallen and they are just in despair, that can just derail any sort of even the best sort of treatment that's going on. So you see that one of these things in here, that the spiritual vision and blindness can have extremely important implications on your physical health as well, and also how your relationship is with the divine on this. So these, the Perushim or the Pharisees, they're the ones who are saying, "Hey, we are keeping ourselves separate. We're trying to keep society separate from the influences at that time, Roman culture and the Greco-Roman culture that it had descended from, trying to keep society separate from that so that you would not have the same situation that came in Israel's history that led up to the exiles. Idolatry, kind of bringing the syncretism, kind of bringing those beliefs in from the nations, sticking them into the spiritual blender and hitting liquefy, and you have a nice little spiritual smoothie of all kinds of practices and just slurping it all down and taking it all in together as if it all can blend in together. But that's one of the things that you see in many of the lessons, that, hey, the things of the world cannot be just blended together with the things of heaven, because you can have them working complete opposite from each other. So that if you try to, and that's something Yeshua said in another occasion, that if you try to make friends with the world, you'll do what? You try to be friends with the world, you'll be an enemy of God. Yes. So that is something that we should always be watching out for. And this is a really important lesson that we have in the midst of this, that with the vision going on and the vision problems that Yitzhak was having, what was one of the things that he was not really able to see? He was not able to see that heaven had picked whom? Yes, picked Yaakov, picked Jacob. Heaven had picked Jacob. He may have wanted Esau, the firstborn, to be, but heaven picked Yaakov. So thus, as you see in a number of occasions, we saw with Eli, the high priest, not able to see what was going on with his own family. That's, this vision is not just something that can be physical. You have physical nearsightedness, and so you can't see what's going on. Well, there's also spiritual nearsightedness, or spiritual farsightedness, or just spiritual blindness altogether, like you see the Apostle Paul, where he was, heaven took hold of him there on that road and said, "Hey, you are blind. You cannot see what heaven is actually doing, who the Mashiach actually is, and who you are actually fighting against is me. You are fighting against heaven." So Paul could not see that. So heaven made him blind. And it is interesting that you got that bit of a revelation there when you had one of the servants went to go deliver the message of healing for Paul. How is it described there in Acts? It's like scales fell from his eyes, and thus he was able to see again. He was blind, and then he could see. He could see that he was really zealous for protecting the legacy of God, and actually what he was doing was fighting against it. So he had to be given new vision, heaven's glasses, so to speak, to be able to see, hey, you are fighting against what God is doing here on earth. Well, that's what we'll trim things up here for the things coming up here this evening for Passover. But are there any comments or questions or observations? Yes, we got a couple here. Start first with John and then Carrie.
Yeah, just continuing on that, it's like Isaac was blinded. That same reason that Paul was, he should have known, because Esau gave up his birthright, he had bad marriages, and he was, and what was the other one? Oh, yeah, ignoring the words of God to Rebekah.
Yes.
So Isaac should have known. Mm.
And
yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you see when Paul is reflecting on it, he reflects on that whole thing between Yaakov and Esau a lot in his letters, and talked about how one was selected and the other one was not, and even reflected upon the passages from the prophets that would said, Esau I've hated, but Yaakov I've loved. And was that just arbitrary, or was there something else that led to that? And you see from the Torah, where it reveals there, in just at the end of the passage that we were looking at last week, that gives you the beginning hint of what the issue was. Was Esau's love was for what? The here and now. The red stuff. I'm so famished, I'm going to die. So what good is this birthright? What good is the legacy of the family to me? Fine. You want to take it over? Great. Just give me the food. Then also, when you see that little one-liner at the end of the passage we were looking at before, end of chapter 26, and it's like he had started his family, but he did not really take care of how he was starting his family and whether that would fit into the legacy that he was carrying on. So just like with the food, so with his family that he was starting, it was a family that would diverge off of the family line of the legacy. Now that what you'd see later on in Israel's history, it was a legacy that was indeed blessed. Because when, after the Exodus and the wandering in the desert, when Israel is now traveling toward to go into the land, there was a specific mention of their family members. And Edom especially, which is where you're talking about with Esau, that they are a family with you, they do have a blessing as well. Just like we saw with Ishmael, there was a blessing that was there. And that is something that heaven is respecting here. So those are the things that we also have to remember, that when God is passing along his blessings and his promises, that even if we think they're not going in the right direction or whatnot, heaven has other plans of how they're going to work out. Yes, they do. Oh, yes. And Carrie, please go ahead.
Well, I just, prophetically, this is really just a retelling of the first and second Adam.
Mm, yes, the first and second Adam.
Esau giving up his birthright to preserve his life. I mean, that's really not very much different than the serpent in the garden with Adam and Eve. And then Jacob, for all intents and purposes, kind of dies when he has to leave the area after he's you know, basically crowned, you know, the Messiah. And then with his, when he comes back, that's a second coming also. And, you know, and Esau embraces him. So, and to me, I just, that kind of enhances for me, like the physical elements.
And it is interesting that you do mention that, because when we're talking about the maturity and growth, Yaakov grew through his departure. And we talk about that when we get to the passage where it mentions his reuniting with his brother. There was growth that had happened on both sides of the equation there, and heaven had been working on both sides of the equation, both with Yaakov and with Esau on that. Larry, go ahead, please.
I was thinking when you were talking about the quantum mechanics
of yes.
not knowing where it is. Well, in the arrogance of modern man, we now think we decide by measuring them where they're going to be. We think we cause it to be there.
Yeah, and indeed. And that's kind of the very interesting question. It's a total side topic about what you talk about. Basically quantum entanglement, and we're just playing with that right now, that whole concept of it. Hey, we can communicate over long distances. Kind of, yeah, and see how far are we playing with heaven's toolbox here. So, yes, Anne, go ahead.
This kind of goes back to the Passover of the Israelites over the Red Sea. And I'm just seeing this a little bit more differently. I thought it was the angel of death that went from door to door with the plagues of the last plague of the death of the firstborn. But I see this says here, I will, with an outstretched arm, let me look, with a strong hand, I, the Lord, is I, and none other. I will carry out the judgments against the gods of Egypt. And he says, it wasn't an angel. It does even says, it's not an angel. It was I. I shall show the wonders in heaven and on earth. And so we give it, seemed to me that I was taking it as an angel of death that came to each home. But this says, and with a great manifestation, it said, has any god ever tried to take for himself a nation from the midst of other nations? It is I, the Lord God, did for you in Egypt before your eyes. I did it, not an angel. I think he even says it in there, not an angel or a messenger. It is I. So we got to give him the glory and not... not a messenger or a servant of the Lord.
Yeah, and that's a very thing that we actually touch on when you go through the Passover celebration, because that is a very important thing that you just illustrated there. That, you know, people even in some cases of popular culture have tried to turn the destroyer into some sort of demon or something that was just unleashed in there, but that the prophet is bringing something very important out, is that no, it is actually the Lord is sending the destroyer through. And as something we bring out a lot, that what is blocking the destroyer from doing damage within a particular house? The blood there on there. So and that's one of the things that the lamb or the goat, depending on the family, that is called the Pesach. And the Pesach is just the word in itself is a verb that can mean to either limp or to stumble. It's commonly called to pass over, but it is something that is actually impeding the motion of something moving forward. So that you have something that heaven sends and calls for with the Pesach at the door is blocking something that heaven also sends, the destroyer, at the door. So thus you see that's the how heaven is working here with both the wrath upon, in that case, the 10th plague there of the ones that are keeping Israel captive, and then also heaven is sending the salvation or the block for the destroyer to come to a particular home in both of those cases. But it is also very important to see that for as fearsome as the destroying power is that the Lord is infatuating through Egypt with the 10th plague, which one was more powerful? The Pesach was more powerful to stop the destroyer coming through. So, thus, when you see in Scripture talks about mercy triumphs over judgment, Pesach triumphs over destroyer. So praise God for that. That's one of the great good news things that we have in there is that mercy triumphs over judgment. Pesach triumphs over destroyer.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info, hallel.info.